It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Dr. David Anderson, livestock economist at Texas A&M, livestock economist at Oklahoma State, Darrell Peel on what's ahead for the markets.
We've got kind of competing forces, if you will. You know, normally we see a fall run of calves. That puts pressure on the market, especially for the lightweight feeder cattle. And we'll have some fall run, but we know that the runs this summer have been bigger than usual in terms of volume of feeder cattle through auctions. So there may be a little bit less of that fall run than normal. At the same time, we also count on having things like wheat pasture in the fall to generate demand for feeder cattle. We may or may not have that this year. So it's a little bit uncertain, but underneath it all, again, there's this general trend of stronger prices because cattle numbers are working their way tighter and tighter. And so there's probably going to be generally pretty good support for feeder cattle prices over the next few weeks.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Dr. David Anderson. David is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension livestock marketing economist in College Station. And when I say livestock, it really, there's more than just livestock in there. You cover a lot of different things, but David, always good to have you back.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's just jump in. The contraction of the herd. You know, some have said that this was, we sped up the process because of the extremely dry conditions, i.e. drought across the Southwest. But as we look at where the cattle herd is today, have we started maybe tapping the brakes with some recent rainfall?
Well, I think those recent rains have to help. And you're right. We've certainly moved a lot of beef cows nationally. We moved a lot of beef cows to slaughter. If we looked at this region that Texas is in, the cow slaughter data is reported regionally by USDA, and we are in Region 6, which includes New Mexico, Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana. And so if we looked at Region 6, we've actually slaughtered about 8,000 more heads this year than we did in 2011 throughout to this date. So, you know, we're actually moving more cows than we did then. And I think one of the important parts of that is not only if we had severe drought, that's really affected the whole western half of the U.S. that's forced more culling, but this is also coinciding with higher costs. And while we have higher calf prices than we did a year ago, we also have higher costs, and really calf prices haven't probably kept up with how those costs have moved. But certainly the rainfall has helped. One of the things I've been watching for over the last month is those rains really occurred, more broadly speaking in the state, is do we see a decline in beef cow slaughter? Are we seeing fewer cows going to market, maybe reflecting that we're holding more of those animals out on pastures? And I think it's really kind of hard to tell. Certainly, if we looked at beef cow slaughter over the last several weeks, this time period since we started getting some rains, it's below where it was the last couple of months, but we're still ahead of a year ago. So maybe we backed off a little bit. Maybe we saw that a lot more in the summer. I think kind of the jury's still out. I think these rains have certainly helped. I might argue that we got some areas that got some rain, but the soil moisture was so short that rainfall disappeared pretty fast. And we're also facing some pretty high temperatures. Looking out over the next 10 days, at least in here in this region, we're supposed to push 99 degrees next week. And so that kind of late heat with no rainfall, boy, I think we may suck some of the goody out of this pretty fast. But still, you're right, Luke. Moved a lot of cows early. I think we'll look in the fall and see if we pulled enough of them ahead to maybe have sort of stopped the culling. But I think the jury's still out.
You mentioned slaughter numbers, which really has me kind of thinking. It's been a year or two since the industry has been pretty wound up over maybe an inequality, if you will, between packers and other segments of the industry. But we're starting to see an expansion in packer capacity, albeit at smaller levels, couple of plants maybe in Amarillo. But as you start looking at the dynamics of this, how do you see it all kind of working together?
Well, I think you're right. We are seeing efforts to expand capacity really all over the country, whether it's new entrants building, you know, proposing brand new plants, expansion at already existing plants, or new really small plants where folks see what's happened over the last couple of years and want to try to do some kind of small local expansion of packing or even retail storefront type ideas. And so all of that's going on. And quite honestly, I really think it's a pretty exciting time. You know, we have a lot of efforts where folks are looking at trying to brand their own beef products from their own cattle. I think this is pretty exciting. It's pretty easy to see why over the last couple of years that interest is there. I think one of the difficulties is we are seeing a shrinking cow herd due to drought, due to high costs. And so packing capacity and available supplies is always a moving target. And I think we're still in that case where folks are looking to expand capacity. But one of the difficulties is usually by the time the new capacity is built, sometimes that great opportunity is gone. And by opportunity, those huge margins we saw looking at a live to cut out kind of gross margin idea. So, but, you know, I think we can certainly see why folks are interested in doing that and why the interest is there and why the efforts are there to put together financing to do some exciting new things. And so it's an interesting time.
And I'm sure that packers, the traditional packers, still have in mind what happened 10 years ago and what led to 9.5 years ago, the Cargill plant closing in Plainview just because of, again, a contraction of the cattle herd. But as we talk about all these different dynamics, maybe we need to focus on the other side of the equation for just a moment and look at our consumer, our buyer for a moment. And we've seen inflation levels that we haven't seen in many years, CPI numbers just out. How do you put all this into a box and put a bow on it?
Well, we're certainly seeing a jump in prices. And I think, you know, as you dig into some of the CPI numbers, I think there's some really interesting stuff there. We all know costs are higher. Prices that we see for all kinds of items are higher for a variety of reasons, whether it's, you know, just the logistics, the transportation costs, finding truck drivers, all of those things. You know, it's interesting if we always compare, for example, the CPI numbers that came out, and those prices that came out for last month, we compare to the year before. Because as we know in the beef industry and meat, you know, we have seasonality of both supply and demand. So we want to compare to the same point of a year ago. And that continued to show that prices are higher than they were a year ago. And we all sort of know that. What's interesting is, you know, it's mid-year last year that when prices really started increasing. So we're still comparing to prices that were relatively low. If we compared prices that were reported in the CPI for last month versus the month before, they're basically pretty flat. And we've all seen lower gas and diesel prices. I like to jump into some of the meat, livestock items that are in that report. You got to dig in a little deeper. USDA, from that Bureau of Labor Statistics data, reports an average retail beef price. They report two of them. One is choice, and the other one is what's called all fresh, and it's across all grades. Well, if we looked at the choice beef, it actually was lower than it was the same month a year ago. So we've actually seen a little bit of falling price. Now, it's at a much higher level than it used to be, but it's one food item that on average was actually lower priced than it was the year before. And I think there's some interesting things going on in terms of consumer demand. Consumer demand for beef and really all meats has really stayed surprisingly good. Given all the talk about everything else, folks are still buying meat. They're still buying beef. I think we do see some ample evidence that folks do what we expect them to do as an economist is, you know, we start switching what we buy. So we may move away from high value say steaks, but we might keep buying hamburger and ground beef. And I think if we looked at wholesale price data, we see exactly that going on, where at wholesale, steaks like ribeyes and New York strips and tenderloins, stuff like that, have been well below a year ago. In fact, 25 to 30% cheaper than a year ago in some cases. Yet ground beef has stayed up pretty high and is about where it was a year ago. If we looked at 90% lean beef that's really going into ground beef. So, you know, that really is some price evidence that shows, hey, you know, folks are switching around. I think we see some evidence in pork and chicken of that as well. People switching around, looking for what seems like a better deal and what fits their budget. So, you know, as we look at some of these price things at wholesale, we've got some sharply lower prices for some items and not for others. And the retail counter, we actually have, using the BLS data, that's part of the CPI, got a little bit of lower beef price there.
We've covered a lot here. A lot. I know that you put out information that people can consume as well. Is there a place we can find that on the internet? Is there some place where David Anderson has a repository of expert thoughts?
We have a new effort that me and a couple of my good buddies here, colleagues, Joe Outlaw, is involved in. We have a thing called Southern Ag Today. And Southern Ag Today is really a collaboration across a group of us extension ag economists across the South. And it is a daily short article and a chart on something in agriculture. And you know what? If you went to the web and you Googled southernagtoday.org, you would find our website for this. This is something we've been doing for about a year, getting this ramped up. We do it every weekday. And the idea is some kind of little article, 250, 300 words on a subject and a chart to go with it. I think this is a great thing to go to. Again, that's southernagtoday.org.
Dr. David Anderson is Texas A&M professor and AgriLife Extension economist on today's Agribusiness Report.
When performing maintenance on your farm equipment, you want the best with quality AGCO parts and the unmatched service of Livingston Machinery Company technicians. But did you know that now you can reap the rewards on every purchase with your AGCO Plus account? Get 2% back on parts and service purchased with your account using the AGCO Plus Smart Rewards program. Choose the smarter way to work, enroll today, and start earning. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
When you grow cotton, you need a heavy-hitting harvest aid. Something that delivers rapid desiccation, that has powerful performance and safe handling. That something is Reviton herbicide. What's more, Reviton comes with a low use rate for greater convenience and efficiency. Hammer home this year's cotton harvest with Reviton. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Reviton. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Dr. David Anderson with Texas A&M.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. That website Dr. David Anderson referred to is southernagtoday.com. www.farmingcottonwesttexas.org.
The future you want for your farming operation is out there, but it begins with unlocking the potential to control your growing environment. Introducing Momentum from Fendt, a new planting system that senses planting conditions in real time and responds with real answers. That yield, that success, you'll find it with Momentum. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Did you know that the world-famous Café du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Last May, USDA Ford Agricultural Service Administrator Daniel Whitley told lawmakers about a milestone in the McGovern-Dole International Food for Education and Child Nutrition Program.
This is the 20-year anniversary of the program. Since the program's inception, we fed over 31 million children around the world in 48 different countries, purchasing more than 1.3 million tons of American food.
And Wednesday, $220 million. Dollars in investments were granted to 8 school feeding projects in food insecure nations in Africa and East Asia as part of the McGovern-Dole program. The Agriculture Department also announced a $178 million investment to 7 international development projects as part of Food for Progress. That program designed to strengthen both ag systems and trade opportunities for developing nations. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.